Sorry for saying sorry media presents the Purr Podcast, the best podcast for feline medicine and surgery with tips, tricks, and updates for the entire veterinary healthcare team. If you're dying to know more about cats, keep on listening. Here are your hosts, Dr. Susan Little, famous cat vet and textbook author, and Dr. Yola Kerpenstein, talented surgeon and social media geek.
This is Dr. Susan Little.
And Dr. Yola Kerpenstein. That's a radio voice.
I've been practicing. Yeah. So even though this episode will go live, in a week or two, we're recording it on the 3rd of January. So it's the first.
Oh, it's the first one in New Year.
Yeah.
You can't say that because we still have other ones that.
No, but it's the first one we're recording.
Okay. No, that makes sense. So thought I dress up for it and I put my new voice on it.
Yeah.
This very smooth
radio
voice.
Yes. And what do you mean I've dressed up for it?
I mean, you're normally I'm just like, I just got out of bed, look, and you are this shining star. If people would be on our Patreon, which they're not, they could see you, that you're this shining star, outshining me completely. But
that's
I'm okay with
I've already been working for 6 hours, so.
Yeah, I have too, but I do it in my slacks because I'm at home.
Okay.
I have an at-home day, so it's all okay. My name is Dr. Yola Kerpenstein, by the way. And I'm the co-host of the Purr Podcast.
Still.
And the Cat Cafe Podcast.
Yeah, still.
Right. So before we start with this amazing podcast, of course, we have mentioned Happy New Year many, many times already. But what did you do?
For New Year's?
Fun. Yeah.
I worked.
Oh,
like
nice.
At home.
Workaholic.
Yeah. Workaholic. I mean, I don't know. There wasn't really anything I wanted to do. We had a nice family dinner, and nice. My daughter was home for the week between Christmas and New Year's. And she lives in London, Ontario. I always have to say Ontario because it's not like London, right? Which is quite far away from Ottawa, where I am. But anyway, so she flew back to London on New Year's Eve, like in the early evening, and she should have been home with her significant other for midnight. But no, there were flight delays. And so
never happens.
So she celebrated the New Year on a plane.
Oh, poor her. Hopefully they poured some bubbles for her to celebrate.
Yeah, we're very boring people. My son had a very small kind of gathering here, and they watched movies, and I can't remember what they are, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
what did you do?
I hardly dare to say it. I had a cat-free 10 days.
What do you mean cat-free?
I was at home and I didn't see one cat.
Oh, I see.
Right. So, I was at home with family and we had a nice New Year celebration with friends. And we played Jackbox games.
I don't know what that is.
It's some kind of streaming thing. And then you can they have all sorts of games that you can play. And most of the time it's like trivia, but then in a funny way. It was very funny, I have to say. So, and when you get a lot of people in the room, it often gets even funnier. And when there is drinking involved, which I don't promote on the radio waves.
Right. Right. Because you would never do that.
I would never do that. So.
Right.
But no, I had a wonderful celebration, and I hope everybody had a wonderful celebration, and we'll start this wonderful new year, 2024.
Another trip around the sun.
Right. I'm ready.
Which is appropriate, actually, for one of the things we're going to talk about in this episode.
Right. We will be talking about semi-owned aliens.
Well, you're not wrong.
I'm not.
You're actually not wrong.
So So this episode is a combined episode for the Purr podcast and the Cat Cafe podcast. So that's why we mentioned them both. And we do that now and then because if it is a topic that's of interest, not only for our veterinary audience, but also for our pet owners, we like to combine these. So this, although the introduction is a little different, it is the same content. But we are going to talk about an article and we're going to talk about a space event. And the article is Characteristics of Cat Semi-Owners by Gemma Ma, Lynette McLeod, and Zara Zito, which was published in one of our favorite journals, the Journal of Feline Medicine and Surgery. Mm-hmm. And it was published in 2023.
Late in 2023, I think. Right. It just says 2023 there, but I think it was in like the last few months of the year.
And when we read the title, Dr. Susan, there's two things that I picked up. One was that it talked about characteristics of a certain group. And then the second one was that the group was called Cat Semi-Owners. And I have no clue what that is. So I'm really interested, and I think that's what the paper's all about, how we get to a definition of semi-owners. And maybe that changes our view a little bit on cats that are out in the wild.
It changes our view, or it adds to our view of cat owners, I think. So so this is a survey. It was done in Australia. And there's a very good reason why it was done in Australia. And that's because, of course, when Europeans first went to Australia, they brought cats with them, as they did, you know, everywhere they went, really. And so Australia does have a large amount of what have been called stray or feral cats.
Right.
And of course, there's concerns about their welfare. But in Australia, there's a unique situation where in some areas of the country, they have these unique species that, you know, birds, they could be reptiles, they could be small mammals, and many of them are protected. And of course, there's concerns about predation from cats. So this article fits really neatly in a redefinition of our language around cat owners that's been going on for the last several years. And so in North America, we probably wouldn't say semi-owner, although I like that term too.
Right.
Because that's describing the owner. In North America, we would describe the cats and we would call them community cats.
Right.
But what I like about this is it's applying a name to the owners. And more importantly, this survey was done to try to figure out who are the people who do this? You know, why do they do it? So it was a questionnaire that they just sent out to everybody in New South Wales in Australia. And they looked at the responses that they got back. And so they were looking for people who said they care for free roaming or stray cats. That's the people they were looking for.
Right. And Dr. Susan, what other two things did Europeans bring to Australia?
What else did they bring to Australia? People.
Yeah. What kind of people?
Oh, yes. They often kind of deported what people they branded as criminals, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they brought in the criminals. And then what animal?
Well, cat.
No. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the other animal?
Rabbits. And,
oh,
and rabbits
yes.
are taken over that country. So it's a big
right.
place. They're not native. And suddenly there is this rabbit population.
Yes. Yeah,
it's going crazy. But because there's not really predators for rabbits, I think that was the reason that they could do whatever. And that's always difficult when you have an island.
Yeah,
you kind of need to protect your flora and fauna. And if things come in, then it can, and there is no natural defense against that. It could be a plant, you know, it could be an animal. Then of course they grow like crazy because they're protected in this. While they were eaten somewhere else, they're protected here. So there's, I always like to have the example of kudzu in the US, which is a plant from, South America that someone thought was really cool to bring into the US, and it's now a huge plague. Because
it's this ginormous vine that just like covers everything, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. So, in Australia, obviously, I was aware of the rabbits. I was not aware of the cats, but it makes a lot of sense.
I do just want to defend the criminals just briefly because as a genealogist, you know, as an amateur genealogist, you know, I've been looking at how my ancestors went from one country to another. And so a lot of the people who were sent to Australia branded as criminals were not really criminals. You know, they were poor, often poor people who, you know, resorted to like stealing food, for example. So, yes. Right. Yeah. So now that we've completely discussed what Europeans did to Australia, we can talk about
talk about the questionnaire.
Yeah.
I see 8,708 people.
Yeah. I'm still
a little bit unclear, Dr. Susan, about the definition of a semi-owner.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Because they had 588 or 7% of the whole total semi-owners.
Yeah.
How can you define a semi-owner?
So here's how I define a semi-owner, because this has happened to me many times. I will have a cat owner bring in a cat to our clinic, you know, for examination, maybe for vaccination, and I'll be talking to the owner about the cat, of course, while we're doing the exam. And the owner will say, this is not my cat. And I'll say, oh, okay, so why did you bring the cat in? And the owner will say, well, the cat lives in the neighborhood, and I'm one of the people that feeds it, right? But doesn't come into my house typically, right? And other people might feed it too. And because they see the cat every day, right, because they feed it, they just want to make sure it's healthy and it's got his vaccinations, right? But it's not their cat. And so I'll usually say, so you feed this cat every day. And they go, yep. And you're concerned about this cat. And they go, yep. And you've brought it in for vaccinations. And they'll say, yep. And then I'll say, I think it's your cat. Right. So it's a mindset.
Right.
Semi-owners it's a mindset. So they're essentially caring for community cats that have varying levels of domestication, right? Like sometimes these cats become very friendly to the people who are feeding them. But other times they remain really quite feral so that you would never be able to pick them up or touch them. So they run the gamut in their behavior, but they're cats that people take care of, but nobody says it's their cat.
Right. And so I guess then that you have a spectrum of semi-owners. So you have the semi-owner that does everything for the cat that they don't own. But you probably also have semi-owners that feed them now and then or allow them to be in the neighborhood, but don't interact with them that much. But still, they're part of the community. You know, it's interesting. I always think now of, in Africa, the role of the dog was more a community dog, you know, protection of the people that were in a community and alerting them for, you know, when animals strayed into the community area, etc. And so nobody really was an owner of the dog. The dog was owned by the community. Mm. And so that's probably, and some people obviously took more care of the animal than others, but still everybody recognized that it was part of the community. And then I want to go back to Australia that, you know, because there's people that care about these animals, depending on the amount of care that they give, there is also probably a certain, how do you say, attraction or responsibility that these owners have.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of data looking at this group of cat owners or semi-owners, whatever you want to call them, that investigates who they are and what their motives are and so on. So that's why this article caught my eye, because they they did try to start to describe who this group is. And so one of the things they discovered in this questionnaire was that there is as you said, Yola, there's a bit of a spectrum of who semi-owners are. They're not like a homogeneous group. But another thing they discovered is, if you get back to this idea, do they own the cats? Do they not own the cats? So you can see that one of the sentences that I highlighted says, semi-owners often face multiple and complex barriers to neutering or claiming ownership, right? So these cats and these owners seem to exist in kind of a gray area between the people who own cats, they're their cats, they live in their house, right? And then we've got the semi-owners. And then on the other side, right, we've got people that don't interact with cats at all. So they're kind of this a bit of an amorphous middle group. So it's really good to start getting some ideas, some information about detailing who these people are. And this study was done in Australia, so we have to be careful. That doesn't mean we can extrapolate the findings of this study and say that, you know, in the US or in Canada or in the UK, they're the same. So right. Yeah. So I just wanted to highlight a few things in here that we can check out.
Right. So just to summarize, these are cats that don't have a sole owner.
They may not.
They may not. They used to be described as stray cats, but that's probably not the right nomenclature. It needs to be more that they are taken care of by one or multiple people. But the person doesn't feel really that they own these cats. So that, which with cats makes a lot of sense, because I don't think anybody owns their own cat. But and so the new term for that is semi-owned.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I like that term personally.
Yeah. I think, you know, we struggle to find the right words, right? So I, at least for now, that's probably good enough. Label for those people. I do like the term community cats.
Yeah.
That replaces stray and feral.
Right.
I do like the term community cats. And so,
although, do you think that there are cats that are feral?
Sure.
The
definition of feral is that they don't want to interact with people, but they could still be fed by people.
Right. But I also think that location is probably a issue. So a cat in the boonies, when there's no people around, it's probably a feral cat. While a cat in a big city
could still be a feral cat.
Right. But the chance that people will take care of a cat like that is probably higher than if there's nobody around.
Could be. Yeah. And that, you know, I think we just have to be careful, because feral describes the cat's behavior. Right. And that cat may or may not be fed or watched over by someone. You know, they could be. So I think one of the key statements from this article is that they're challenging people to not use the label stray or feral to define interactions with people. Right. So they say many cats surrendered as strays are, in fact, fed or provided with care by people who don't consider themselves the owners. So there's a lot of nuances around these words that they're using. And they put in this really nice chart that or graphic, I guess, that I like, that explains how cats are very adaptable and they will move around through these populations, right? So if you look at the feral cats in the upper left corner there, they've got arrows going each way, right? Because cats can move into these groups, right? They could be truly feral, they're unowned, they're unsocialized, but they also, maybe somebody, let's say it's a rural area, maybe somebody, builds a house, right? In an area where there's feral cats. Well, some of these cats may become unowned, right? Yeah. Where they do start to depend on people and they can move into the semi-owned. Some of them, especially the young kittens, if they get contact with people early in life, could actually end up over here in the owned group. So cats move around between these groups. They really do, which is why we struggle a bit to describe the cats. Right. So I really like that graphic because it does challenge us to not try to make it black or white. You know, you're owned or you're unowned, you know, you're tame or you're feral, because that really doesn't help us. So.
And I think it also gives nice, definitions of the theory. Yeah. So this makes it a lot clearer, I think.
Yeah. I'm just scrolling through here because I highlighted a couple of other things. I don't want to go through all the data, but so a couple of conclusions that are interesting. So they were comparing cat owners who did not feed community cats, right? So they weren't semi-owners, with this group they call semi-owners. And the semi-owners were less likely to own their own home. So they were renters. They were more likely to own three or more cats, like of their own, right? In addition to feeding these community cats, they were less likely to contain their own cats. In other words, their own cats were not strictly indoors. They had access to outdoors. And indeed, they were more likely to own cats that were always outdoors, right? So it's interesting, isn't it? Because they would own cats that live outdoors and they would say, that's my cat.
Right.
But then there'd be, say, a community cat that lives outdoors and they feed it and they take care of it, but they don't own it.
Right.
So, you know, you do have to kind of wrap your head around and try to understand people's motivations. And so, interestingly, in this study in New South Wales of Australia, surveys are never unbiased, right? So we always have to be careful because there can be some bias. But this survey seemed to conclude that these semi-owners were more likely to be of a lower socioeconomic status. And I think that's been found before. And because you see this gradation, right, on sort of on one end, the people who feed the community cats or have cats of their own, but they live outside, you know, and so that type of ownership then kind of slides closer and closer to owned cats that live indoors. And in many, many countries, that movement of people that go with the cats, right, that go from community cats or feral cats to owned cats is an increase in socioeconomic status.
Right.
Because it might change where you live. It changes if you own your own home. It might change your income so that you would buy a pedigreed cat, right, rather than feeding a stray cat. So there are correlations there with socioeconomic status.
Yeah. So they summarized that semi-owners were significantly more likely to be female,
yes,
live in urban areas, live in lower socioeconomic areas, and rent their home.
Then,
like you said, they often own cats themselves.
Yeah. So one of the conclusions was that these semi-owners are not one homogeneous group.
Right.
So, they suggest that it could be differences between people who are feeding like one or two community cats in the neighborhood versus people who care for multiple unowned cats. So they might be caring for a cat colony, for example, right? So they all fall under kind of this semi-owned name tag. So that's another interesting outcome from this study, is it highlights the fact that these semi-owners are all different too, right? Just as the cats they're feeding are different, right? They might be cats who approach people, or they might not. They might be cats you can touch, or they might not. The people who feed them and care for them are also quite variable, right?
Right. So, and don't you think there might be a bit of a bias in this study? Because
sure, there's always biases, yeah.
Right. Because if it's true that they mainly live in urban areas, that's a biased group, because I bet that outside of urban areas, there's a lot of cats that are mm-hmm. walking around in the outside that people might not care for or may care for. I always compare it with, you live on a farm and you have five cats running around on the farm, which are your cats, but you just feed them or you don't feed them, or you just have them there to protect.
You call them barn cats or...
Yeah, it's barn cats. So, but that, so I'm surprised that there is not a bigger population of those people. That might be a part of how this questionnaire was set up or done. Or it might be even part of the fact that it's only a small part of Australia that they checked. So, in New South Wales. So that's, of course, a very urban area in Australia. So I wonder if you would do this questionnaire somewhere else in Australia, if you would get the same results.
Yeah, that's very true. So that gets back to what I said, is you can't extrapolate from this. You do that at your own risk, right? Because these conclusions are relevant to the population who answered the survey in New South Wales, Australia. And I think you're exactly right. In other geographic areas, there might be different outcomes, or there might be some things in commonality, but some differences. I think that's quite possible. So I also think that highlights when an area, say a government of a state, for example, wants to or is concerned about controlling cats because of predation on endangered animals, for example, right? That they have to get to know the people who are feeding these community cats. They have to get to know who they are and what their motivations are, because they are a really key group for reaching out to try to contain the cat population and try to decrease the rate of reproduction, right? So, and that could be through trap, neuter, return programs. We've talked about those before, other ways of, sterilizing cats that may be on the horizon, like injections and pills and so on. And so this group of people who feed and care for these cats are the people that need to be reached, and governments or organizations need to work with the people who provide the care for these cats, and they need to get them on board, or I think efforts are doomed to failure.
Well said, Dr. Susan. And we're almost at time, so we still have to talk about cat in space. My favorite Muppet.
The Muppets.
Pigs in space. So let's switch over.
We will. Just before we leave, though,
at the end we'll put it all together.
Yeah. So. Just before we leave, I don't want to forget to say that this is an open access paper, and so I will put a link to it in the show notes. And I want to point out that our website is up to date.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'll
great
put a link.
News for the new year.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, we're getting off on a.
We'll see how long they will stay up to date.
The reason it might stay up to date is because I have delegated the task to someone else.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the message that was sent into space.
Yeah. So when I mentioned this, Yola, you hadn't heard about it. I came across the clip on social media. So this is from a few weeks ago in December, right? And so NASA is the space agency in the United States. And they have a project going on right now that, do you remember the name of it, Yola?
Psyche.
So they have a spacecraft in outer space that is unmanned. That's called Psyche. So it was launched in October. And I think what they're doing is they're testing means of data transmission from outer space back to Earth. So when the spacecraft went up, it had this cat video on board. Right. And then once it, I think it's orbiting an asteroid or something right now.
No, it's on its way to an asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter.
Okay. So that's like really far away. But in December, they sent a video, or a video was sent from the spacecraft back to Earth. Right.
Why is this important to us, Dr.
Well,
Susan?
So here's the thing. They use something called a near-infrared laser, and I have no idea what that is. Right. But apparently that's how you send cat videos from outer space back to Earth. Yeah. And the bit that we like is the fact that it's a cat video.
I know. Yeah. It is a cat video.
Yeah, let's get it to restart here, because we need to see it.
Oh, are you going to? We're looking at the cat video right now. Yeah. I see a orange cat.
Yes.
That is chasing a laser thing on chairs. It's quite cute.
Yeah.
So that's the video that they sent. It's high definition.
There you go.
And how long did it take to send that video?
I think somewhere in this article it said like less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, 101 seconds.
Really?
Right.
They're 1 second over. 100 seconds would have been like a nice round number.
Right. But what I think is really fun, and that's why it goes back to semi-owned cats, is that Taters is not the first cat. The cat was called Taters. Taters the cat. Tater is not the first cat to travel into space.
Yes, but Taters himself didn't go to space.
No, that's if you would time out for a second, then I could have said that Tater was the only cat that went virtually and humanely, because there was another cat that was sent to space in 1963. Oh. The French sent a cat into space called Félicette. And Félicette was a stray, or we call it now semi-owned.
No,
or
yes, community
maybe
cat.
Maybe not owned. And she survived the space travel, but she was euthanized because they wanted to study her brain. So that was not a very nice ending of Félicette. But Taters is safe. It's just a video that was sent up. But while we were talking about semi-owned cat, I kind of had to think about, okay, now we're linking it all together.
Yeah.
So good job, Taters.
Yes.
I hope you have a happy life somewhere.
Yes. On this. Word. And you know what I find fascinating is that it took, 101 seconds to send that video. I can't download a video in 101 seconds.
So right.
That's
right.
Pretty amazing speed, which I guess it should be, right? Because the spacecraft costs $1.2 billion, so it better be fast.
And when we're talking about billions, they estimated in this article that we watch 26 billion cat videos a year.
26 billion with a B?
Yeah, billion with a B.
Wow.
So that's a pretty popular. And we knew that, because that's why we have the Per Podcast and Cat Cafe Podcast. So, Dr. Susan, would you like me to do the honor, or do you want to do it?
I think because I got 2024 off to a good start, that you can do the finish. Or like if you're a YouTube pro, which I'm not. I just watch a lot of YouTube. It's called the extro.
The extro, instead of the intro. Yeah. So this was the Per Podcast. You can find more information at perpodcast.net. And we're also on social media with the handle Per Podcast. And we love you for being with us for now our sixth year.
I know.
And more than 180 podcasts. So congratulations to you, Dr. Ooh. Susan. We need to find a nice location for our 250th podcast, which hopefully will happen probably this year or next year. So it will coming up pretty soon. Very excited.
Even for 200, why wait for 250?
I know, that's true. We were supposed to
hit 200 this year.
Then the pandemic broke out. So.
Yes, I know.
Very exciting to have you here. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And this is the end.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. Let's do the Cat Cafe intro.
Yes, sir.
2, 1.
Hello, this is Dr. Susan Little.
Oh, there you go with the voice again. That voice is kind of creepy. This is Dr. Yola Kerberstein. This is the Cat Cafe podcast. And Dr. Susan thought as a good intention for 2024 to stimulate her podcast voice.
Yes. Yes. Don't worry. If you find it creepy, it won't last. Like, see, no, here I am. No, I'm no. right back. So
I agree. Yeah. So, but we have a very exciting episode where we will be talking about cats in space, and we'll be talking about semi-owned cats.
Yeah. Semi-owned cats in Australia and cats in space. And I know they don't sound like they go together, but they do kind of.
They do. Dr. Susan, would you like to take the honors of ending this wonderful podcast?
No. I perfected the intro for this. I don't want to mar my streak.
I know. Right? So this is the Cat Cafe podcast. You can find more information at catcafepodcast.net. We have a social media handle at Cat Cafe Podcast. We will always ask you, also in the new year, if you have any topics that you would like to discuss, please send us a mail. Go to catcafepodcast.net, send them a message, and then we'll discuss the topic. Any topic goes, as long as it is about cats.
You can message us on social media too. And Yola, it's only the beginning of the year, so it's too early to flub, you know?
To flub?
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's why you wanted me to do it.
Yeah.
The first one to flub. All right.
See?
All right. This is it. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Susan Little is a feline medicine specialist with two cat-only hospitals in Ottawa, Canada. She is best known as an international speaker and as the author and editor of two textbooks, The Cat, Clinical Medicine and Management, and August, Consultations in Feline Internal Medicine. Along with three cats, she also admits to owning two dogs, and you can follow her on social media with the handle at Cat Pet Susan. Dr. Yola Kerpenstein is a diplomate of the American and European College of Veterinary Surgeons and a big cat fan. His specialties range from surgical oncology and reconstruction to minimally invasive surgery. He is the author of two textbooks on basic and reconstructive surgery. Did you know he was allergic to cats? Yola works currently at Hill's Pet Nutrition. You can follow him on social media with the handle at GVETSX. This episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of the Take the Pledge Against Struvites in Pets Facebook page. Did you know there are three easy steps to treat bladder stones in cats with lower urinary tract signs? Step one is to take a radiograph, and if there is a stone present in the bladder, step two is to use the Minnesota Urolith app for iPhone and Android to determine the most likely type of stone. Step three is to treat the cat for at least 2 to 3 weeks with an appropriate diet and see if the stone gets smaller. If so, keep feeding that diet until the stone is completely gone on follow-up radiographs. If not, check compliance with the owner and look for alternative treatment options. Join veterinarians worldwide to take the pledge not to remove struvite stones by surgery anymore. The opinions of this podcast are those by Dr. Susan Little and Dr. Yola Kerpenstein. Veterinary medicine is a complex profession, and often there are multiple diagnostic and therapeutic options for different disease processes. If you're a pet owner with questions, please go to your local veterinarian. If you're a veterinary professional, ask your questions on our Instagram page at perpodcast.